My sponsor made me. No, 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 no. That's just like pride talk. So we talk, why, my sponsor made me do this. No, they don't. See, we are fully accountable for this, ourselves. So I think it's important when we take a look at steps to align our will, see, that we do it because we want to do it, because you don't have to. But then there's consequences for those choices. So what we want to do next is we want to take a look at this interconnectedness of the steps. And so what we're going to do is just an overview. Remember we talked this morning, it's about harmony, balance. It's interconnected. Everything is interconnected to each other. Spirit and intent. Two roads. See the red road, the other road. So we want to take a look at the interconnectedness of steps to see if they make sense. Because the steps is they're not designed for fear. They're not a fear-motivated process or something else. So we just want to take an overview look at the steps. Then that person can decide, is this something I want to do? Because who would want to do something if you don't know what the outcome is going to be? Now, the big book, it talks about some outcomes. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, remember, well, that's talking about the odds. So it doesn't say, maybe I'll have one, or kind of, possibly, it might. It pretty much states, it will happen. Like a law. You work the steps, you get the result. So if you're on a spiritual awakening, do them. If you don't want one, then don't do it. But maybe you can get it another way. See? And then it talks about, rarely have we seen a person fail. Now, what are those odds? 50-50, see, 80-20, what? Like, rarely have we seen a person fail? But it doesn't say to do it any way you want either. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly done it this way. So the steps, it's about a precision way of doing it. Very, very precise, because it will, as we see, the steps is about an implementation of laws from an unseen world. About these principles that it talks about. So as we take a look at these steps, we're going to just kind of make them like a building block to show how they all interconnect. So in step one, there is two parts for this step. But every one of the steps, it also has, each of the steps, it has a principle. One of these principles that it's talking about. So as we do these, it says in step one that principle is honesty. That's what that step is about honesty. So there's two parts to that step. The first part is to admit we're powerless over alcohol. Then the second part is to admit our lives are unmanageable. So you see the thing about admission. Admission is the key to power. You know, there's this line, it says, like, let go. As soon as you do, is let God. Right? Surrender, as soon as you do, to win. So it's admitting of that is what transitions us into that place of that power, that thing we're looking for. So in the first half, we need to look at the powerlessness over alcohol. Now in this workbook on page 11, there are guidelines as to where in the big book are the instructions for each part of those steps. That's where the instructions are. So what we're going to do is just look at an overview of these steps. So we look at powerlessness over alcohol in the first one. And then in the second half of the first step, there are 9 areas to look at in terms of unmanageability. Personal relationships, emotional nature, full of fear. So there's 9 specific areas to look at in those steps. That's one of the workshops we're going to do, is to practice looking at those 9 areas. All we want to say right now is there are 9 areas. Then when we take and look at step 2, Step two of that principle is hope. So there's nine areas of information that we look at in step one. We bring that information to step two. So we connect from step one to step two, those nine areas. Then that step, it says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So what we do in step two is we look at the unmanageability, and in step two it's came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could. So one of the things we'll do in step two is we will create a vision in nine areas of our lives. So we bring, if I take a look at in step one, say for example, the personal relationships, and I'm able to see where they're broke, then I bring that to step two, then I ask myself this question, see, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could. Well, what would this relationship look like if it worked? So I'm always asking myself this question, is there a power that exists that could make my relationship successful? See, if you take a look at the word sanity in the dictionary, it means having a sound mind, soundness of mind. So I see where the relationship is broke in step one. In step two, I take a look at, well, what would it look like if it was working? How would I have me be in it? No matter what that relationship did, how would I have me be? So we create a vision in step two. And then the question is there, am I willing to believe that there's a power could make that happen? Now, am I remotely willing to believe that there's a power that could make that happen? Am I kind of willing to possibly believe that maybe a million divided by 10, there is one zillionth of an ounce? Am I willing to believe? Any of those are more than enough to make it work. So what I end up doing in step two is setting a vision in nine areas of my life, personal relationships. So the question when we do step two is not how is this power going to do it or when is this power going to do it, but is there a power? Am I willing to believe that there's a power that will do that? So we create a vision in nine areas of our life. Now if we just momentarily go up and look at step 12, it says having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, the vision that you set in step two is the spiritual awakening that you get in step 12. And that's all you get, no more and no less, for that pass through the steps. So once you set the vision, then these steps remove the obstacles that block. And when the obstacles are removed, you get that vision. So that vision that's set in step 2 is the spiritual awakening in step 12. If that makes any sense. Then once we do that, we'll go to step three, for which that principle is faith. Now, I used to wonder sometimes about, made a decision to turn my life and my will over the care of the Creator, God. Then I would say, why would I want to turn this will thing over anyway? And where is it? And why is it such a big deal to turn that will over? Because you see, from step 3 through step 11, all of that work is done on the will. That's where the work is done. It's not done on my brain, my mind, and all that stuff. It's done on the will. So let's just say that I could draw the will in a box. And in this will, there would be certain things that I do. I could be dishonest. I could be selfish, but there's certain things that's in my will. Now, if we had, say, a mountain, and on this mountain there was this was a lake, had water in it, and say down the mountain I lived in this house, and that I would have a river would come out of that lake, and I would take a little pipe out of that river, and I would run that into my house, and that's where I get my drinking water. So if that water tastes like crap, see, is there anything wrong with a faucet? Is there anything wrong with the river? So what I need to do is, if it tastes funny, I need to go back to where is it causing that to taste funny. So if the results in my life are not right, then I need to chase that back. So the relationships between the lake, so the lake is the will, the river, the water I'm tasting is the results. So if I want to change the results in my life, then it might be to my advantage to turn the lake over to the Creator. As it is, with all the junk, everything, exactly how it is. So in step three, it's just taking it as it is, not cleaning it up. You see, now, very often we confuse this turning the will over with our feelings. So we go through this thing, we turn it over one day, and then we say to the next day, well, I took it back. Then I turned it over, and then I took it back. I turned it over, took it back, turned it over, took it back. See? Phew, what a day. Turning this will over and taking it back. But you see, when you take that third step, it isn't that way. Once you turn your life over to the Creator. Now, the best way I've heard it said is this guy one time in AA, he told me this story about, he said, he's talking about step three. And he said there was these four frogs sitting on a log one day. He said one of those frogs made a decision to jump in the water. So he said to me, he said, now how many frogs is on that log? So I said, well, there's three. He said, no, there's four. One of those frogs just decided to jump in the water. But he said the difference is, he said, when you turn your life over the care of the Creator, then He will, that, like that frog, once you decide, then He makes that frog a different color. He makes that frog orange. So when that frog decides to jump in the water, or we decide to turn our will over, the Creator makes you an orange frog. You will never be a green frog again. So what happens if you get pissed the next day? You're a pissed off orange frog. See, after you take that step, what happens if you get angry? You are an angry orange frog. Once you cut the deal with a Creator, then you can't say, well, make me green. Well, I'm going to be orange. Well, I'm going to be green. No, whatever it is after that, you are orange. So you go drink again. You're a drunk orange frog. See, you cannot go back and forth. So we got to understand that that is a decision. That decision is of the will, that I take that will and I turn it over. See, to the care of the Creator. So we take this will like it is and we shift it to the care of God. So once we are able to do that, then we come to the fourth step. And what the fourth step is a way to do an examination on the will. So we keep continuing to experience another principle. So in this fourth step, there is three parts to this inventory. There's a resentment inventory, a fear inventory, and a sex inventory. The resentment inventory is done in five columns. So you put the name of the person with whom you have a resentment against. Second column, you put what they did. The third column is where you actually you put in the third column one or more of up to seven things. This is where you inventory the ego. The ego masks are revealed. The fourth column in the resentment inventory is where you come out with a list of character defects. You actually get the name. You get the name of the flaw that's in the will. So you end up with a list of those defects. Then the fifth column is you get the names of the person to whom you owe amends. That happens in the resentment inventory. Then the fear inventory is done in four columns. First column is the name of the fear, why do I have it, did self-reliance fail, and what should I have done instead? Then the sex inventory is done in either 7 columns or 9 columns, depending upon how sexually active one is. If there hasn't been that much happening, 7 column works pretty good. If you've been tearing it up, then 9 columns seems to be better to do because you can see the patterns. Because in the inventory, you want to be able to see the patterns. Then in the 6th column of the sex inventory is where you come out with a list of the names in that area of amends, that you make amends. Then we take that inventory when we are done and we do that 5th step. We admit to ourselves, to the Creator, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Then when that is done, we do steps 6 and 7. 6 and 7, the information for steps 6 and 7 comes out of the inventory. So in the 4th column of the resentment inventory is the list of defects that you take to steps 6 and 7. The 5th column of the inventory is the list of names that you take to steps 8 and 9. Right, it's all linked together. It's interconnected to one another. Now, all of this work is always done. See, the steps are after step 3. The steps are all done on the ego. They are not done on, you know how you say, like sometimes you write inventory, you say, well, you got to write the truth about yourself. You're really not writing the truth about yourself. You're writing about the lie about yourself. You know the saying says, the truth shall set you free. Well, if what you are writing about doesn't make you feel free, then you must be writing on something other than the truth. Whatever it is you're writing, it's not the truth. You're writing about the lie. Does that make sense? Is this... So you're writing all on ego. It is all ego information that you're writing on. So as you progress up through these steps, another way to look at it is you kind of go through a tunnel in this sense. You work steps 1, step 2, step 3, step 4, step 5. And when you do steps 6 and 7, where you ask the Creator to remove the defective character, and you're willing to have him do so, it is at that point that a transformation takes place in the will. So let's say that I discover in the inventory that I have a lot of selfishness in the will. And in a way, what this whole process on the will looks like, you ever remember a long time ago they have the style where you'd buy these coffee tables and you could put pictures on them, then you could paint that plastic on there so you could see the pictures but you couldn't get to them. That's kind of the way the will is. At first some stuff gets in there and then you can't get at it, so you're just that way no matter like what you do. But then you take that will and you turn it over. So in other words, you change those pictures, whatever that is. So you're going to have the Creator do it. So the first thing happens in the inventory is I start to identify what those particular instances are in the will. When I do a 5th step, that would be like going to that table with a big chisel and chipping off that plastic coat that won't let you get to it. That's what the 5th step does. It makes it available. So 5th step, it removes the plastic, but the pictures are still there. When I do steps 6 and 7, once I see like I'm selfish or judgmental or I lied, when I become willing to have the Creator, so my job is to not remove it. My job is to be willing to have Him do it. So if I say I'm willing to have Him remove my selfishness, then He takes that away. Remember, it's a polarity system. What do you think He will put back in my will? Pardon? Probably. So if I'm dishonest, Am I irresponsible? So what happens is he starts to put those principles from the Red Road back into my will. Now, have you ever noticed, for those of you who have worked step 6 and 7, you ever noticed right after you do it, everything turns to shit? So what you say is, it didn't work. But when it turns to crap, it means it did work. Because you see, when I go through that tunnel of step 6 and 7, when I come out of it, I come out with a will change. In other words, what happens is, my will is changed, but my head's got the old stuff in it yet. So a conflict occurs. So the concept is, conflict precedes clarity. When I have alignment to the will, when my will says, I choose to be an asshole, and my head says, you are one, I have no conflict. Isn't that right? But when the will changes, now all of a sudden I'm in conflict because my head doesn't know that yet the Creator made a change. So it always seems to be worse. But it's not worse. I mean, it is worse, but that's healthy. It says now the will is going to start to drive the change. Because now I'm trying to figure out, who am I now? Because I don't know who I am, and I won't start to see that until after I start to get that feedback, that conflict occurs. So I step 6 and 7, it seems to be worse. Then it gets better. That's because of that tunnel that we go through. So the will is transformed right here. Now very often we really struggle in step 6 and 7. You see, there's this story, it says, about this person is baking a cake. So they get all the flour and sugar and all that, and they put it in this pan, you know. Turn on the stove, get it to 350, get that stove all heated up. Then they pour that batter into this pan, smooth it out with a spatula or whatever. They take it to the stove, open up the door, it occurs. So I step 6 and 7, it seems to be worse. Then it gets better. That's because of that tunnel that we go through. So the will is transformed right here. Now very often we really struggle in step 6 and 7. You see, there's this story, it says, about this person is baking a cake. So they get all the flour and sugar and all that, and they put it in this pan, you know. Turn on the stove, get it to 350, get that stove all heated up. Then they pour that batter into this pan, smooth it out with a spatula or whatever. They take it to the stove, open up the door, they stick the cold cake in there and close the door. Now, if you want that cake to bake, what you have to do is leave that door shut. Well, what would happen if I would put that thing in there? Well, how is it? Well, how's it doing? See, and I open it up. If I keep messing with it, in other words, I keep examining it and keep questioning it. Well, when's he going to do it? Well, obviously it isn't today. It's been going on now, you see, 14 hours. If we keep doing that, in other words, you have to put yourself in the oven and don't peek. Let the Creator bake you. Whatever happens, even like you get pissed off, that doesn't mean the step didn't work. It just means you become pissed off. But if we take that and then we start to peek in that, you know, trying to do something about ourselves, see, the step says you just say to the Creator, I am willing to have you remove it. That's it. That's it. There's like nothing more to do. Let him handle it. But if I start to peek in there, so you keep interfering with it, then it takes longer. So we get the list of character defects in step 6 and 7, column 5, and then there's, I think, column 4 in the sex inventory is the list of the amends for step 8 and 9. And it's from 8 and 9 where we make our amends. So when we look at that process of looking at the steps in a circle, then it says we are now at that point in the steps where in 8 and 9, that's where we start to set ourselves right with other people. First we set ourselves, we find a relationship with the Creator. Then in the south with ourselves, and then step 7, 8, and 9, we look at our relationships with others. That's where we start to see at the level of spirit and intent, if you remember that. If I'm out of harmony with you, and we're interconnected, I'm also then out of harmony with myself. So when I go and set myself right with you, then I set myself right with me. So I really get the ability to be at one with the Creator from you. It's by setting myself with you, if I have an amend to make. See, I cannot pretend, like I can't be mad at you and pray myself into being at one with the Creator, because we're interconnected. So it's when I set myself right with you, then all of a sudden I set myself right with me. And that's why we need to look at making those amends, and then we set ourselves right with others. Then we come to these maintenance steps, steps 10 and 11. And these are the steps where we maintain that new picture. It's a daily maintenance steps where we pray every morning, check ourselves during the day, and then we also constructively review the day in the evening. Then the 12th step, it says, we go give this away. So the steps are just they're an interconnected system in a very orderly fashion. These are all laws that allow us to change ourselves. So can you see where this would be damaging? You know, it's like finding the pay value to do the steps. That's why you can't skip around, because there's information that you need from the one before it to go ahead and to make it work. So see, then that's why I started to see, like, they would say do them in order, but it didn't make sense to me until I started to see the whole picture. Indians are stubborn as heck sometimes. Now I understand why it has to be done in order. Now I'm willing to do that, because I didn't know it was interconnected, you see, in this way, and that around that whole circle is how all these things would happen. So now I say, I'll do it. I want to do it, like that. So is there any questions on this interconnectedness of the steps in relationship to what?
In relationship to the wheel.
Yeah. You always start in the east. It always says the entry point. It always starts there again.
So, I made amends then.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I did the fifth step. I did all that.
Sorry?
You forgot one. I didn't do any part about that.
Right.
So now I'm back again.
So you're going to start the steps over?
Yes. Yes, I
have. Yes. So is your question that do I need to go make all those amends I made to someone else again?
Yes.
No. But did you miss any?
Obviously, I must have missed you a lot, otherwise I would have run out. So this is why I'm finding it very fascinating in looking at it from a different angle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, maybe when we get through that, we'll talk about slipping and how does it happen spiritually.
Mm.
Okay, any other questions on this? All right. Then the last thing we want to do is look at the enemy to the steps that isn't an enemy, once you see what the enemy looks like, why it seems like an enemy. And that enemy is ourselves. But every time, like when we make any type of a change or we look at going for something, you notice there's this tension or stress system. It just starts to kick in, and if it feels like this, it can't be right. So one of the things we want to look at next is we want to take a look at how information is stored within our mind, and then what happens to us after that information is stored in our mind. what happens to us if we start to mess with it or make changes. So we're going to take a brief look at that. So we're going to look at thought process, how thoughts are processed. There's three parts to a thought process. One of them is a conscious process, one is our subconscious, and one is something called the creative subconscious. So how information gets inside of us is through our senses. Our eyes, hearing, smell. So in other words, as I go through the day, I'm always looking. I'm always smelling. See, I'm always listening. So I have like a little radar system that's constantly scanning the seen world. So I have senses for the seen world. Then I have a sixth sense for the unseen world. So I'm able to see, I'm able to sense in the unseen world. But the biggest value of these senses are just so I don't run into tables. And if I don't stumble into things. Other than that, there's not a whole lot of value in terms of trusting that what I see is really there. But I do have the ability to function in the seen world, listen, you know, to smell, taste, touch. So it's through my senses that information comes into me. Then I take that information that I see and I store it in terms of beliefs, habits, attitudes, expectations. Or maybe I could call that my version of truth. So you'll hear us say, let me tell you a fact. See? Let me tell you the truth. Well, is it really the truth or is it just your version of it? See, is it in terms of the truth? Or maybe we could call this, it stores and it creates a reality. So I'll put these in quotes because it may not really be reality, it may only be my version of it. So as I perceive a situation, there's two questions that we as human beings are constantly asking ourselves all the time. So one of the questions I'm always asking myself, this thousands of times a day, is have I seen anything like this before? So I'm always doing some type of an association. Have I heard anything like this before? Have I smelled anything like this before? See? So my mind has a filing system. So as it watches during the day, it's always asking that question so it knows where to put it. It's a filing system. So I'm always asking, have I seen anything like this before? So let's say, for example, that I live next to somebody here in Albuquerque, next door, they're really a jerk. Geez, I just can't stand them. Right next door, so you have nothing to do with them. You just ignore them. So let's say one night the phone rings, and a friend from Denver calls up and says, hey, guess what? I just won the lottery. I'll pay, party time, come on up. See, I'll pay for it. So you hop on a plane, so you go up to Denver. You're going to stay with that friend early Saturday in the evening. You hear a little noise downstairs. You got your snagging clothes on, see? Go downstairs. You go in the kitchen, get a little drink, little snack, and you walk in the living room where the noise is, and all of a sudden you see this person looks like that friend that lives, or that person lives next door to you at home, that jerk. And you look like that at that person, and you step back into the kitchen, you know, lean against the wall, you chug your drink, and you say, I don't believe it. I thought God would only make one, but he surprised me, he made two. One in Albuquerque. Now here's this jerk standing there in the living room. Now you know absolutely nothing about this person. Not truth. It's the first time you've seen them. You haven't talked to them. But see, the mind is saying, have I seen anything like this before? Yeah. One in Albuquerque. Now here's another one. Right? Then it goes on to ask another question that we usually don't know consciously, but we're doing a type of evaluation. So we're always asking ourselves, we perceive, see, we associate, then we ask, is this going to be good for me or will this be bad for me? Bad for me. Then we decide, I'll have nothing to do with him either. It doesn't matter if I talk to him. I can smell jerks. This one is a jerk. Now, you really know nothing about them, right? Now, let's just say, for example, another one is that, let's just say I've been in six relationships over the last 2 years. Seem I can get those little hummers, but I can't keep them. So I get in relationship number one. You know, where you smile at her and she smiles at you, and you do all the kissy poo, and everything's really good. And then you have a little snap, you know, a little fight, and then you make up, and it gets a little bit worse. And you vow and you promise to stay together. And then pretty soon the knockdown dragout comes and zippo, that one's gone. So all of that experience is recorded here. All the things you think about what is going on is recorded here in relationship number one, and you get out of it. Saying, no problemo, lot of fish in the sea for me. It's nothing. Let it go. So then you go down to the place and you find relationship number two, whatever that is. So you get relationship number two and you go through relationship number two and there's the all the and then you irritated and you, then you see break, lose them, zippo, that one's gone. I just hunt in a different part of the ocean. See, there's a lot of fish in the sea. So each one of these relationships, all six of them, you go through them over a period of 2 years and pretty soon you say, I got to get myself together here. I got to take a little break from relationships. So you decide to take a break. So you get onto the bookstore, you get all the self-help books. I'm okay. You're dysfunctional, I'm dysfunctional, you know. You get all these books, these self-help books, you know, to get yourself together and you read them all. And then you stay home painting, you know, learn a little music or whatever, but you do nothing. So you say you're out of relationship 6 months. One night you're sitting there, phone rings. Geez, it's your friend from Denver. Did you never believe this? I won the lottery twice. We're going to really party this time. Why don't you come on up? You say, hot dog, I'm ready. See, I've been on my own 6 months. So you fly up to Denver. See, same deal, upstairs. Your little noise downstairs, put on a snagging clothes, come back into the kitchen, get a little drink, little snack, and you walk into the living room with your drink and your snack, and all of a sudden you perceive this relationship. She's looking at you with this big pearly show, and see, and you're not sure it's you, so you look to make sure. So you got to always do that, make sure you know that it's you, because we've all seen that before. And as soon as it's, soon as you sense that it's you, well, the senses perceives a relationship. Have I seen anything like this before? Uh-huh. Six times. And what is this leading me towards? Well, nothing good. You know something? You tell yourself. There are no good Indian men left. You know something? All the good ones are taken. There ain't none left. In fact, so-and-so said, so-and-so said, so-and-so else said. There's none left. In fact, there ain't no good men left anywhere. They're all junk. I am destined to live forever with junk. All the men are bad. Now, is that the truth? Well, have you talked to, you know, those 80 million that you have not met yet? Well, no. See, but have you seen anything like this before? Uh-huh. And what is this leading me towards? See, nothing good. So we decide. Now, we need to realize that this version of truth that's recorded in our minds also is recorded in three dimensions. It's recorded in words that trigger pictures that have with it a feeling or an emotion. So you have the words, the picture and guilt feelings. Words picture joy feelings. Words picture fear feelings. So this version of truth is always recorded, you see, in three dimensions as my version of the truth. And we are always asking ourselves, now the point we need to know about how this thought process works is we are always making now-time decisions based on past previously recorded information. Right? We're always evaluating what's going on now based on past previously recorded information. We need to know we work that way. Now, when we look at this creative subconscious, it has some functions. One of them we're going to talk about is one of the functions of the creative subconscious is to make sure that I maintain sanity. Sanity means that whatever my version of truth is, this creative subconscious's job is to make sure I act like that version. And any time I act different than that version of truth, it will introduce anxiety, tension, or stress into my system. Anytime I act different than the picture. So I have, for example, many pictures or images of who I think I am. As long as I act like that picture, I'm okay. If I start to act different than that picture, tension, anxiety, or stress occurs in my system. If I start to think about acting different, tension, anxiety, stress will start to occur in my system. So if I say that I walked a long time on this black road, and I just start thinking of becoming spiritual, or I start thinking about, as soon as I even start thinking about it, tension starts to occur in the system. You see, this creative subconscious, its job is to always make sure I act like the picture. Like, for example, let's say, for example, I have a picture or an image here that I believe I'm a shy person. I can't talk in front of people. And that's the picture. The creative subconscious, its job is to always make sure I act like that picture. But let's say, for some reason, I got to get up and talk in front of people. Ever notice what happens? See, as you get up to talk in front of people, a little while before you get up there, your palms start to get sweaty. Get real sweaty palms. Then you'll notice that your stomach will start to flutter. You get like butterflies in your stomach. Well, it sends a signal from the brain to release gastric juices into the stomach, even though there's no food, and starts to make it flutter. And it'll even affect your respiratory system. So pretty soon your breathing just gets out of sync. You just can't seem to get your breath. And it'll go to your mouth and it'll shut off the flow of saliva. So you get what's called cotton mouth, right? No spit. Your tongue gets big. You grab a glass of water, you drink it, you go, and you swallow it, and nothing gets wet. It just goes straight on down. And it'll go to your vocal cords, and it'll stretch the muscles in your vocal cords. So it stretches, so when you talk, your voice cracks, so it sounds funny. And even though you have the information about the subject of which you want to talk about, it might be something you just love and you know a lot about it, it will shut down the function of recall when you get up there, so you all of a sudden your mind goes blank. So there you are, there already. See, sweating and ready to puke, and you're making funny noises, you can't remember shit, you know. And all of a sudden you see, now what is going on? Why does that happen? The creative subconscious, when the senses see you acting not like you, that's when it happens. It goes to correct for the mistake, and that's how it does it. Psychologically, physiologically, it'll do things to your body to get you back to act like the person you believe yourself to be. If there is a fight between success and sanity, which one do you think wins? You can count on it. Sanity always wins. Until I change the picture. So you see, when we come in and we start working steps, we need to know this is going to go on. And what we're going to really be looking at is not the truth about us. We're going to be looking about the junk. We want to find what is inside of our minds, what words, pictures, and feelings, what situations, where have I been living my life out of harmony? I want to know that. You see, what is causing my life to be unmanageable? Give me the name. Give me the story. I'll take it. Because I need to know that in order to fix it. So we need to know that this process is going on inside of our minds. So when you get that fear feedback, that's not fear. It's just a tension system. It's a feedback system inside of our minds. Just the thought of changing sometimes. See, we'll do it. Let's say, for example, you have somebody who's been in an abusive relationship. Say for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years. Just had the hell beat out of them. Stomped on, makeup. I promise, I love you, if you don't, see. But over a period of time, you just really end up with an image of self or feelings of low worth and all that. Then, let's say you dump that person. Take a break, you see, go to safe house or wherever, get everything back together. Then you say, well, I'm going to start dating again. Have you ever noticed people who have been abused, what type of relationship they usually end up in again? Very similar. Or one that's married to an alcoholic will go and marry another alcoholic. But you ever notice that, if you know some of them, like let's just say that one of their dating, that they say an abuser, they end up with a person who's just really good to them. Jesus, guys, he sends them flowers and always trying to hug them and touch them and be intimate. You notice very often what will happen there? They will sabotage that relationship. Very creatively, see, do something to drive that relationship away. And your friend will come by and they'll say, "Excusez-moi, that one was the keeper. That was the one you should have took home to mama. Why did you do that?" "I don't know. You know, he just drove me nuts. He's just irritated, touching me and also telling me this shit. You know, I don't know. It just drove me crazy." But do you see, if you have that picture and you know how you should be treated, and your sense of see you being treated like you shouldn't be treated, what's going to happen? The creative subconscious will put anxiety, tension, or stress in your system to correct for the mistake. It's a mistake for you to be treated good. It's a mistake for you to be treated kind. So you very creatively go things to do to correct for it. You see, somebody who's been abused can go into a room of, say, 500 healthy men. 3 of them are sick. They can walk in that room, just stand there. And if there's 3 sick ones in there for them, they'll have them lined up right in front of them in about 30 seconds without saying a word. Right? You say, "How the hell do I get so lucky? I always pick the same one." And very often your friends will say, "You know, that's the 7th one you picked. The only thing you change is the color of their hair. Everyone's always the same. They're not. This one's different." And then 6 months down the road, you say, "How come I didn't see it? How can I be comfortable with somebody like that?" See, you can be comfortable living in hell once you get used to it. You can be comfortable being treated like crap. To be treated good can be uncomfortable. That creative subconscious, always correcting for the mistake until we change the picture. So when we look at these steps, all we're doing is we're going and looking at misinformation, not the truth about who you are, but the junk that keeps us in a way. You take, many of us are raised in native communities. What kind of mistruth do we have in there about who people told us that we were and we believed it? You know the story, you see on television, the story of the Wizard of Oz? Everybody see that? There's Dorothy, Scarecrow, the Tin Man, right, the line. They got lost. They went to see this good witch, whoever it was. They said, "We're lost." They said, "Well, go to the Land of Oz. There's a wizard there who can help you. He'll help you get back home." See, so off they went to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. See, they went off to see the wizard. See, because of the wonderful things he does. He's got the power, you know. "Well, do you suppose he could?" "Oh, yeah, the wizard could. Yeah, he can do that." So if you remember when he got to that Land of Oz, first of all, that wizard didn't have the power. That wizard was a fake. He even had to hide behind a curtain. So the lion got up there. The wizard found out the lion was a coward. And the lion said, he says, "For all the brave things you've done for Dorothy and Toto, I, the Wizard of Oz, I grant you this medal for bravery." Now if you went, you see, in the morning he was a coward, talked to a wizard said, changed his belief, and off that line went thinking the truth. "I now have it." See, Scarecrow had no brains. And the wizard said, "Every smart person has a diploma. I, the Wizard of Oz, I grant you this diploma to be smart." See, so our lives sometimes are very, very impacted by these wizards, these who saids, but I don't know what I don't know, now I know what I don't know. You take a person that goes through medical school, say, for example, and 1 week before they graduate, you wouldn't go to one of these students and say, "Hey, I need an operation, right? Do something to me. Patch up my stomach." No, you wouldn't think so. 7 days later, no more training, except they go through a who said. Right, their little circumstance, right? They put on their gowns and their tassels and have music's playing and bands and all this stuff. And as they walk across the stage of this who said, "By the power given to me by the state of New Mexico, I grant you this diploma to be a doctor." See, now go cut them open. And we let them. See, how come? Not because they know more, it's because the wizard said, now it's okay. Before then, the wizard didn't say he'd cut you open. But now he said you could. Now we let him. You see? The tin man had no heart. So this wizard said, anyone who has a heart, you can hear it tick. So you give him this clock and affirmed, you see, the alien heart. Now, the difference between Dorothy, the scarecrow, the lion, and the tin man, and many of us Native people, is they went to see a positive wizard. The wizard they went to see that they gave the power to, when they had a problem, gave them brains, see? When they had a problem, gave them courage. But too many of us were raised by, are married to, hung around with, counseled by negative wizards. Who said of the greatest magnitude that told us the truth? And told us, and told us, and told us. And it could have been a dad, see, who was a teenage, 40-year-old teenager, telling us the truth. Who are you to think you will amount to anything? And there's other messages that we get as Native people. You're not good at this. Because I love you, I tell you this, see? And so we start accumulating all of this crap belief inside of ourselves. Could have been a counselor, shouldn't have been counseling, telling you the truth. Could have been a older brother. See, an older brother, 2 years older than you, is a who said. Right, a 12-year-old is a who said to a 10-year-old. So we have a lot of stuff in here. A lot of images, a lot of pictures built within ourselves, and that is not who we are. That is junk information that some negative wizard told us and we somehow sanctioned and put it inside of ourselves. And that's what we're straightening out in the steps. Is really finding out who we are. It's like if I told you, and you didn't see me do it, I said, there's a pencil behind my hand. Well, I don't see it. Honest to God, there is a pencil behind my hand. Well, I don't see it. You are one of the most beautiful, creative, beautiful children of the Great Spirit. You're just something awesome. Well, I don't see it. The steps is about removing that blockages. Oh, now I see me. That's what we get restored to in step two. It was there all along. So the steps is about removing those blockages. Not about becoming something, but discovering that which has been inside of us all the time. But you see, this information, it blocks us, our ability to be able to see that. Then this causes certain results in my life, because once I get the image and I start to act different than that image, tension or anxiety occurs in my system. So let's say I have an image, I can't talk. See, I have no feelings, but you've been whipped upon, beat upon, all that other, and all of a sudden you can't talk, you can't feel. Well, what happens when you try it? Tension, anxiety, or stress occurs in your system. I just can't do it. It just doesn't feel right to me. So when we take a look at these steps, this is what we need to know, that this process is going on, but I'm able to look at that in a step, knowing what I'm looking at is not the truth, but it's the truth about the junk. Does that make sense? But that's how our minds work in relationship to these steps. Any questions on this? Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26. All right. Then, we want to use this tool called, to do the workshop, we want to use this tool called mind mapping. Mind mapping is a way of taking notes using whole brain. It's a whole brain way of, very, very quick, easy, fast way of gathering information. So we'll go through a quick example how to do it, and then we're going to break up into groups. Let's say that I have a friend that is going to be speaking, say, to some university, and they're going to talk, say, this one particular night at 7:30. So they ask me, they say, would you come over and support me? Because I'm going to be giving this speech. I'm kind of afraid talking in front of people. So I said, sure, I'll be there. What time? We'll be there by 7, because I got to talk at 7:30. So you say, okay. So you go down to the place where they're at, and as you walk in the door, one of the bellhops gives you this note, little envelope. And you take the envelope, you open it up, and it's from your friend. It said, had an emergency. Sorry. I have a favor. Will you give the speech? So here you have a very short amount of time, and this is P.S. Talk about anything you want, and by the way, you got to talk 20 minutes. So what I need to do is figure out how do I gather a lot of data or information very, very short. So let's say that what I decided I would talk about is sailing. That would be the subject I was going to talk about. So I got to gather a lot of information about sailing very, very quickly, enough to organize and put together information. So the rules of mind mapping, instead of doing line, list, sequence, logic, order, instead of doing it that way, the mind map process works is that you draw a picture or an image of the subject that you're going to talk about in the middle of the page. So let's just say this was a sailboat. I'll put a little flag on it. No, maybe I'll put a heart around it because I love sailing. Now, if I say sailing, what is one key word that would trigger in your mind?
Water.
So then I would draw, so mind mapping says then, you just draw a line and you put that key word on there, water. What does water trigger?
Waves.
What else does it trigger? Sharks. So I'll put jaws. That's a shark. What else does water trigger?
Cool.
Cool blue. What else does it trigger? Fishing. Okay. What does fishing trigger? Huh? Eating. All right. What might be another key word about sailing?
Wind.
What does wind trigger? Huh? Clouds. Okay, I'll draw clouds to me. See, my math's kind of nice. Use symbols or whatever. What else does wind trigger?
Cold?
Cold could trigger rain. I'd rain. Somebody says knots. What else?
Storm.
What might be another word sailing would trigger?
Sailor.
All right. Drowning. So I could make a wave and put a person underneath the water. Now, do you see that mind maps? Remember, the mind always remembers by association, by association, by association. All right, what does, see, wind would trigger storm. What does storm trigger?
Fear.
What does fear trigger? What does anger trigger? What does stress trigger?
Panic.
Pardon?
Panic.
What does panic trigger? So do you see, when you use that key word, the natural process, it tells you in the mind where the next association is filed. Now, even my associations alone is what would trigger, but you will trigger different ones than you. We won't trigger the same ones. It's because we're all different. So do you see that in a very few minutes, I could accumulate enough information to give a 20-minute speech? So then I could take a look at it. So I'll talk about this first, then I'll talk about fishing, and I'll talk about sailors, I'll talk about wind, I'll talk about storm. So using the mind map process, I'd be able to gather a lot of information very, very quickly. So sometimes the information that I want to hook on to might be second or third level information. Does that make sense? It'd be further on down. So this is what I'd like us to do, is I'd like us to count off first by fours. Could we start here? Where did we leave off? One, two,
three.
Four.
One, two,
three, four. Are we all the way through? What is the number? With four? So you'd be number one and two? All right. Now I want you to break into these groups. We missed back here? So we left out with two, so. Is there group three? You number three? Four? Okay, so everybody have a number?
Al, you didn't get a number.
Did you get a number?
Yeah, one.
No, Al.
Did you get a number?
She didn't? So where did we leave off? You'll be number group one? All right. Now, I want you to get in these groups and I want you to do some mind maps. And this is what I'd like you to do the mind maps on. Group one, you know the first half of the first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol?
Before you start this, maybe we should get them in the groups. Group one over here, group two there, group three over here, and group four over here. And I'll pass out
paper so they can
write it down.
Okay. Just because I just thought of something, I want to just change the rules again. I would like men on this side and women on this side. Men here. Two groups. I want two groups. Group of men. All right. Okay. This is what I want you to do your mind map song. As we get into looking at the steps, as the first half of the first step says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. I would like you to then take your piece of paper, draw a symbol over that subject, could be, you know, alcohol or whatever. But then I want you to do a list of key words that to you means powerlessness over alcohol. How did you know that you were powerless? What was going on? So I would like you to explode your ideas for you on how you experience powerlessness over alcohol. You get the idea? All right.
Two.
Whatever your symbol, you have to have an object or symbol. The topic is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. So whatever that picture or symbol you choose in the middle is good. Then start doing those key words. How did you know? How are you able to admit powerlessness over alcohol? All right? Okay, so you'll need someone to do the mind map or more than one.
You do?
Okay, they have a pen? Is that one you can see from? Mind map one was looking at powerless over alcohol. And we looked at it from two perspectives. One, you'll see we look at it from a male perspective, and the other, you'll see we looked at from a female perspective. So we'll see if there is a difference in how, even gender-wise, we look at difference in powerlessness over alcohol in the first half of the first step. So, Jerry, would you be willing to go over what the men's group did in looking at powerless? So, if you remember from the thought process, it says, things in the being, it will cause certain results that we will see. So if you could go over some of the key words.
Okay, we started with the eyeball or sign. We started off with drunk, degradation, lying, cheating, stealing. Stealing went to fraud, and fraud or stealing also went to jail. We have no choice, cornered, compulsion, defiance, helplessness, infancy, sadness, homelessness, shame, emptiness, dirty, stinky, and low self-esteem. Hospitalization, jaundice, adultery, AIDS, cirrhosis, and hepatitis. Another subcategory with guilt, shame, and slimification. The book talks about that. Unhappy drunks will relate to that. Bewildered, tired, demoralized. Impending annihilation, loneliness, arrogant, willful, scared, fear, anger, depression. Anger again. Branches off to on the run. Vomiting, blood, ulcers, pissing in the pants, frozen. DT, wine sores, plasma center, hustling. Suicidal, homicidal, matricidal, patricidal, and revenge. Resentment, anger, jealousy, and self-will. Misery, sick, addicted, uncontrollable. Egotistical, foolish, false pride, disconnected. Can't stop. That pretty much covered it for most of us.
So you get that sense or the feeling of powerlessness? I mean, a bloodshot eyeball? Where's the marker? Oh, here's one. So in looking at that first half of the first step, You see, there's this process. It says, recognize, acknowledge, forgive, and change. So when, say I'm working this, understand what we're doing here is just working together to get an idea of everybody's experiences, to get an idea of what various words triggered for powerless over alcohol. So a person could even personalize this. But when I look at admitting powerless over alcohol, I have to admit this is me. I have to recognize what that is. I need to acknowledge that's me doing that. That is a result in my life. It's not her fault or its fault. So when we admit we are powerless over alcohol, that when I look at these things, am I able to admit that? That this is powerlessness. Okay, could we have the women come and look over or share what they looked in terms of their powerlessness?
Whiskey bottle, and the spiral is like a tornado, cyclone, kind of entails how our life, as it starts at the bottom of the bottle, when we start drinking, there are certain things that we feel, like we feel good, we feel euphoric, we feel a part of, we feel accepted, we feel powerful, we feel sexy. Intellectual, fearless, we feel in control, we feel talented, we feel like that we're a good driver, a good dancer, some said the best dancer, better than best, feel like you could talk a lot more, a lot easier, sex is a lot better. Let's see, you feel brave. These are the things that after we start drinking, we felt like this is how it made us feel. But then as we continue to drink more and more, the turmoil began to start inside of us, and it just exploded. And powerlessness to us was no self-respect. Word was speed, DUI, death, cops, and then powerlessness, powerless over our bodies, bathroom habits, hygiene, eating habits. We were powerless over our behaviors. We were powerless over our language, families, values. We lost our sense of beliefs. Powerless over our spirituality, just powerless over our lives as a whole. The other word was misery, which was a sadness in the facial appearance. Was suicide. Misery loves company. Misery. Was that depression and what's that? Cigarettes. Then another word was relationships, abuse, which out of the relationships abuse come neglect, sexual, mental, physical abuse, no self-respect, generationally, divorce, murder, jail, loneliness, prison, sexual, promiscuous, incest, rape. The truth was just totally obliterated. There was no truth in who we were and what we represented. Stealing, lying, cheating, put ourselves in physical danger. Couldn't see that abusive relationships was harming us. And as a result, we're totally spiritually bankrupt.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
See? Good job. I really like how you brought that out of the bottle. I haven't seen that approach before, because that really puts it in perspective, you know, because it kind of was that way at first, and then just slowly, or it gets worse. And I don't know how anybody else sees this, but I watch in AA, you know, sometimes you just watch. I think that the women, when they go downhill like that, they really go down. And God, they come and they're so painful. I don't think that men understand the pain that the women come when they come to the program. It's just, I think, they just go down faster and they go down further. I think their pain intensity of that is just awesome from what I can see, you know, because it goes that way. But you see, even like how women look at it, a little bit different from one another in some regards. I think that's why it's good that when you get help in the steps, women work with women, men work with men, you know, for a general guideline, because it's not the same. It's different. But when a person can recognize that, acknowledge this is what it done, that then I'm able to admit powerlessness over alcohol. Does that make sense? And, you know, that doesn't need to be analyzed. A lot of times when we work the steps, you know, what we do sometimes is we analyze too much. See, this is about process. It's sort of like, you know that, like you ever get lost in some town, like say you were in a rental car or something, some strange town, you get lost, then you open up the glove compartment and you get a map out. And when you open up that map, there's two pieces of information is needed before movement can take place. What is the two pieces of information? Step one is where I am. Step two is where I'm going. That's a relationship. That's a two pieces of information that is needed before movement can take place. And I think sometimes this happens. You see, the mind is only interested to move, you know, to get going. It's interested in two things. Where am I now in relationship to where am I going? It needs step one, where is it broke and what's the fix? We're going to look at that next. But too often, one time I was stuck in this place, and this one elder just